too. People don't work now like they used to. But boy, I'm not kidding you. They don't eat like they used to. You
eat put how much to the acre?
Oh, we put 200 pounds per acre.
Goodness.
That
you right there in the row.
Yeah, we right in the row, you know.
Yeah.
And put now, we had cotton about 3 or 3.5 feet apart,
yeah.
And corn about 3.5 to 4 feet apart.
Yeah.
The rows.
Now you didn't have to line off your row. You just let your mule light off down there.
Before we got these planters and equipment, we'd take a shovel plow, what's called a shovel plow, and lay it off. Then they'd come along, so I'd put a line, somebody come along dropping corn behind.
Yeah.
All right, there come a man behind, you see, with a turning plow on the, and he had a turning plow, and he had to make 2 trips to the...
Yeah.
He had to... and put it back up there. But after we got this coal planter, one could do what all of us is doing.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's just like you got tractors now. You can do so much more. You could turn more land in a day.
Two rows at a time.
Yeah, you can take and plant 2 rows at a time.
Yeah.
I don't know if you got the equipment where you can put your seed. Can you put your seed and fertilizer down with the equipment you all have now or not? Both at the same time?
Yeah.
Well, before you do that, it's all right. Well, this other one, it wasn't bad running.
No, it wasn't bad.
My daddy, he didn't want to run that planter at all, you know, because he was old and I was young, and it wasn't as quick as it didn't take me long to learn how to guide it.
And he didn't want to fool with that
planter. He'd want to turn it like you turn the plow to make it do things, and you didn't do that. You turned it like a car.
Mm. Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was different, you see. And my dad, he is getting up a... around in the 40s, you see, he didn't do much plowing. And if Buck was home, he's in school most of the time. If he was home, he'd help me.
Yeah.
But if he didn't, Daddy had to help me do the plowing. And
you know what they did with those old coal planters, Mr. Wheeler? They would just hitch them onto this cultivator bar that goes on a tractor and use them old mule planters.
Use the same planter, I imagine.
Same planter.
I imagine you did. And see, you can hook 2 onto a planter and plant you 2 rows at a time.
That's right. 2 of them.
And if he runs in that, hey, God, it makes it much easier on it than a mule. You got
to watch
that mule all the time, because if he does get off a little bit, you got to tell him to get back. And I haven't trained it to even go back there. And
you didn't have to shoe the old mules and horses.
Yeah, you did up in that clay land now. You don't like down here in Florida. You had to keep shoes on and ride your feet off to the quick, and you couldn't walk. And that clay land, and if you worked them, when you hook one up to a plow in that clay land, there's a lot of rocks there, you know.
Yeah.
And it was hard, and you hooked a mule up from 6 o'clock until 11:30 and took it out and put it back to work at 1 o'clock, start back to plowing at 1 o'clock and plow till 6 or 7 that afternoon, and let it stop 5 minutes between times. That gave it a break 5 minutes, all that mule got. Boy, Daddy'd holler, "What's the matter that mule up there? If you stopped, what's wrong?" You had to go and get it. He didn't hurt us.
He just kept after you.
No, he didn't. He didn't overwork us, but he didn't want that mule stopped. You know, it had to go with a big family like we had, and we never did have to sit down to our tables. There weren't plenty on it either, because mother and dad both worked, and they're both good workers too.
What'd you have on your table?
Well, sir, there's always beans, peas, iced potatoes, green beans, canned beans, dried beans. And in the wintertime, we could open a can of beans and put on it all kind of vegetables. And we had plenty of pork, and it's called a smokehouse then.
Mm-hmm.
And you caught the moon just right, and you caught the weather just right. On the full moon, it usually rained and turned cold. Boy, I did dread that. The wind would be coming from the northwest, and put your hogs today. You had to butcher them when it's cold, you know. We didn't go to town and get ice because we didn't have time.
Yeah.
And what we would do, we'd turn in the smokehouse, we'd turn in and put a layer of salt on the ground. Then we'd turn in and put a layer of meat, our cloth over it. Then we'd put a layer of salt on that then, and we'd come back with the meat, and middlings and hams and all like that, and put over that, then a layer of salt and another pack on, we'd have it stacked up that high, and a big smokehouse all over the bottom of it.
Yeah.
We let it stay there so long.
Do you put it in big boxes?
No, not to start with. We didn't put it in boxes to start with. We put something down there to put them on. It kept better on the ground. It keeps much better on the ground.
On the ground?
Kept much better on the ground. But we put a cloth or something that the dirt couldn't get up to that.
Yeah.
Something to protect it, you know, and put salt, then lay the meat on that, then put another layer of meat on top of that, and then another on that. We'd stack it up that high all over that smokehouse. We'd just sell big hogs at the same time, you know. Mm-hmm. Then we let it stay so long, and went in there and took all of that salt off of it and hung it up and let it drip and drain, and it pulled every bit of that water and fluid out of there. Do you know I can't eat any pork at all now out of the market? I can if I go home, take that home, and salt it down overnight, just cover it up, but I can't get any more salt now. The stores are not selling it that way.
No.
Bulk salt, you can't get it. And I can take pork chops and go ahead and put those on, and you'd be surprised at the fluid that they put in the meat that people's eating, putting in the stomach now.
Oh, really?
That's the reason people can't hardly eat meat. If you get your pork chops out of the market, go home and salt them down, and till the next day and cook them, and be tender, three times as tender. But do not salt no beef steak down. I tried that one. I made stepper. I couldn't eat it at all. I tried that. Did you ever try that?
No.
Boy, you try your pork chops or spare ribs or backbones or anything, and I mean covered up with salt overnight. I put it in something pans or either if I've got I don't have just a little for myself, you know. That amount, I can just put it in a large bowl, you see, and something put in there, and it'll be a lot of water and stuff in it next morning. Then I'll wash it off good, you see, and go in there and fry it not too fast, you know. It won't hurt me to do that, but that's a lot of trouble. And I've just last year I've had to plumb quit eating pork. I don't even fool with it anymore.
Mr. Weaver, the only bulk salt I know about is they sell it in a 100-pound bag to mix with soybean meal to put that out for free feeding. And the salt makes them...
Well, can you get it? And I can use salt in with that plain salt. I cannot use that iodine salt.
It's not iodine salt. This is plain bulk salt.
Well, I know, but I say I can't. Yeah, but I can use that. You told me about.
Well, let me tell you.
Have you got any of it?
I.
Or can you get any?
They use that in the mills to mix. They sell it. They sell it mixed. They'll mix it for you.
Well,
at the feed places, mm-hmm. wherever they mix feed. The last I bought, it's been 3 or 4 years, was 100 pounds, and I think I paid $2 for it.
$2 a hundred. Well, you take Mr. Sasha's been keeping it down there, and I've been using getting 5 pounds of it in little small bags, but it says he can't get it anymore. And I got some in the box that's supposed to be just plain salt, but it's not. It's just more than half salt.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to not have iodine in it. And I'm using just a little of that, but I can't. But I've used all that other. I want to put the taste of it. It doesn't hurt me a bit.
Is that right?
And it doesn't bother me. Now it may not work that way with you all.
Well,
the only thing you can do is just try these things.
Dixie Lily and B&G up here, you know, way out on North 13th Street, 6th Street, there in Gainesville. They mixed it. But, you know, I quit using it because my cows wouldn't eat that stuff with all that salt in it. Now, these old wood cows will eat anything.
Yeah.
But I put it...
Well, you keep a salt lick out there, don't you?
Yes.
Well, you know, they get just what they want for that. You don't need it in your feed. You don't have to have it in your feed.
Well, I know, but they gave them that to keep them from eating too much of the protein. So it didn't cost them so much. They figured if they could eat a pound of protein a day, that'd hold them.
Mm-hmm.
And the salt just made them drink water, and that's good for them. And the salt was cheaper than the labor of putting it out.
It is.
But my animals would never eat
well,
it.
Well, if they don't eat it, you give them what they'll eat if it's good for them.
And I rigged up another system. I just got these little stalls. They're not stalls. They're slips, size mm-hmm. of one animal.
Yeah.
Go in there, and I can give them a pound of it, or 2 pounds, whatever you want. And you know what I found out? That some of the best cows are the slow eaters, and if it was free feeding out there, just put it out there and let them fight for it, the best cows wouldn't get their share.
No, that's right. The slow eaters is the best cows. That's right.
Yeah.
It's just like my dogs up there. They're the ones that just eats slow and takes the time. They stay in better shape on less feed than the ones that just swallow the whole right quick, you know.
Is that right?
Yeah. Sure is. You're the same way. Now, that made me think, I'll tell you this. When I was about 17 or 18 years old, I had a case of fever. It was malaria fever, and it was a tough one. When I quit work, it had to be tough, and I had to stay in the bed 3 weeks. Doctor kept me there, and so that he had me to eat very little and slow, and chew it well before I swallowed it. So that I went ahead and did that, and I formed the habit of eating slow.
Yeah.
I said, if it's good for a sick person, it ought to be all right for a well one. And I formed the habit of eating slow, and I eat slow all my life. I've tried to eat slow, and I can't eat fast now.
Well, you eat, Mr. Weave eats it slow, he don't ever get the food finished. Over here, we have to give
well,
him to take
more,
it home.
Listen, it does me more good, you know, if I eat slow. Well, that's what we're talking about. So that now I have to, I'll tell you, if I try to eat too fast, I don't like to say tell too much, because see me walking around, you don't believe it. If I eat too fast, it's just like I go crowding in here, you know.
Oh, really?
And my heart, it crowds my heart, you know.
Oh, really?
And I have to eat slow now and be careful not to drink too much at one time. More often.
Yeah.
Take my time, you see, and it doesn't bother me a bit in the world. You take, if I go in and eat and don't chew the food, and I can't chew too good now, and I have to eat much slower than I would if I had my teeth. But, I noticed all these things, and when I was a kid, I'd listen to other people read before I learned how to read, you know. And I can remember things like that better than I can a lot of things that I read about myself. And if I see someone do it, I'm impressed on my mind more than I do if I read it.
That's right.
And my eyes always give me trouble. At times I can read, and times I can't, and it gets to running together in that way.
You mean you always had trouble with
your eyes? Oh, I had all my life. I didn't know it that there's worse than I thought there was. I ought to, should have, see, I wore glasses nearly ever since I went to work for myself. I got glasses.
Since 1920?
Yeah. I wore glasses all times since then. Except in when I was carting and I couldn't wear them because of the distance my glasses is, I lost one or two pair by sticking them in my pocket, you know.
Yeah.
That distance that I saw in Mark, I couldn't see it.
Yeah.
You can make 3 pencil marks right close together, and I can't tell them. My eyes won't separate those pencil marks. You can make one right there and go across, and I can saw a half a line and leave a half of that monkey there.
What's that?
Right on the cross.
What's that?
My eyes won't separate. You can make three marks that close together on the board, and I can't tell which one I'm sawing.
Yeah.
My eyes won't separate it. You can make one mark there, and I can leave half of it for you. And there's no glasses on.
Well, that's a crazy thing, isn't it?
It, my eyes comes and goes. I'll be reading sometimes, and everything just runs together that way.
Oh, yeah.
And the doctors hadn't found out what that is, none of them yet. And I guess at times, and when I have these headaches back here, see, low blood pressure, you have, back of your head hurts you.
You used, Mr. Reed, when you first started, when you started wearing glasses, you just bought them there on the counter at the drugstore. You fit yourself?
No, I had them fitted to my eyes. From Jacksonville, came to Micanopy, and I had him, I bought a pair, paid him $15 for him. He came around and tested my eyes for him. He was out of Jacksonville. You know, back at that time, 21, you know, they weren't getting too much business, and they had to get out and hunt business.
Oh, really?
And so that, not like it is now. They got doctors, so many more people, so many more doctors now. See, man, you take this, so many more people now than there used to be.
And he come out there and
he went around through the country and they'd get caught up in Jacksonville, and they'd send them out around the country to little towns, and they came through making open. I had him test my
eyes. And they'd announce it ahead of time. They'd be there at a certain day.
Yeah. They'd come out and fit your glasses if they had appointments. See, they'd fit more than one in the town. They'd make money doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they could come out there and fit several glasses. Look how much it would cost to all the people around
the
little town.
They'd go to the drugstore and do it, and the drugstore wouldn't charge them anything.
Yeah, no. Well, you take that fitting your own glasses there. Now, the trouble of that is, if one eye is different to the other, and you can see... You ordinarily, if you need glasses a little bit, you may can get by with it. If your eyes are correct, you can get by with that. But see, my eyes are not the same.
Yeah.
During the First World War, my eyes tested 20/30. One is 20, and the other is 30. And you see, that's what's on.
So you couldn't get by with the drugstore glasses.
No, you can't. I can, but. I got some magnifiers and glasses. I can put on magnifiers and glasses about like sawing the material like, but I can't see out yonder with those on.
Yeah.
And my eyes got so bad now, I've got to have distance glasses. They say they wouldn't give me this distance glasses. They wouldn't give me anything. I said mine didn't need no distance about 2 years ago, last time I had them tested.
Yeah.
And both and had this pair made.
You had to put, you had to shoe your mules on that clay up there and rocky clay.
Yeah.
And it got hard, dry, it like concrete, wasn't it?
Yeah, you just grind the feet off, you know. And then we had a lot of rocks and gravels in places on the farm up by North Alabama where I was reared at. And you had to have shoes, you see. And in the wintertime, you couldn't use them. That snow and frozen ground would just cut the feet off till they couldn't walk. And we tried to let them go barefoot, and so much to keep, well, we weren't using them, let them run in the pasture, you see, and just grazing. If we were in the summer, we'd take the shoes off of them and trim the feet and just turn them loose in the pasture. And we couldn't use them until that fall, you see. Or if the ground began to freeze, we'd have to put shoes on them in the fall, keep them out there frozen ground and cutting the feet off. It'd do it too. Work, going to town, you know, and working them. And them out there grazing, you know, they'd get to where they couldn't walk. But we'd watch the feet, and of course, we didn't know that we didn't have a blacksmith shop, you know. My uncle had one right close to us, and we always, down we lived in Winston County, and we were down in Walker County. Other people had one right close to us, and we just had our work done, you see, didn't charge much. Charging the plow for three cents a piece. What would it cost you now? 50 cents to get a plow shop, maybe $1.
But that mule's foot, after you trimmed it to put that shoe on, then when you take that shoe off, that's going to be sort of tender anyhow.
No, it that hard part, the hard part growed out, and it that the hoof on the inside was tender, but this outside, the hard part, had growed out with the shoes on that long enough that he'd take care of that, and they wouldn't walk on that frog. They couldn't, when the hard part wore off, then they'd go to walking on this what's called a frog in the middle of the foot. You've looked at them, I guess, haven't you?
Yeah.
And they couldn't walk on it. Then this would get tender out here just like your fingernails, your toenails, so far you can cut back, and that's all. And they'd grow out long and with shoes on. Then you could take them off and let them go back for a while. And we watched them, and till we went to working them hard, we did let them go back for a dog. Could it made the feet stay in better shape? And
just wear shoes all the time, didn't
if you wear shoes all the time, just for the feet to go to breaking and wouldn't hold a nail, the shoes on there, if you tried to keep them on all the time, you had to let them go back for the time. Now, a lot of people has never seen this happen, don't know whether that's true or not, but it is true. Did you ever see a Guinness colt?
No.
Well, I bought a mule was a Guinness colt, and it didn't have no frog in its feet. And I'd heard when I was a little boy of my grandfather talking about that, and I didn't think to look when I went and bought this mule. I didn't think to look in its foot to see.
Looked just like another mule.
He was the stubbornest, meanest mule I ever seen, and they told me they was. And you couldn't break him. You had to break him every time you hitched him up. And if you weren't a good rider, you better not put a saddle on him. Because one of my friends tried that. He wanted to ride him one day. I'd been riding him. He wanted to ride him. I told him, I said, you've got to get on this mule. You've got to get on him quick. Oh, he'd been used to riding. You know, he was a good rider. And he was pretty good rider, too. Before he made his mistake, he didn't use his speed. My oldest brother and I, my brother-in-law weighed her about 50, 60 pounds more than I did. And I told him, I said, now if we go to hold him, I said, you better hold on over there. So this mule's going to buck when you, and I told this boy, I said, he's going to buck when you put your touch that stirrup. And if you don't get on quick, you won't get on him. So the way it wound up, he jerked loose my brother-in-law. He got scared and turned loose and run. And when I got, and he bucked till he hit his foot in my hip back there and knocked me loose from him. And I don't know how I came loose. He bucked over me. I just lucked out in that. He bucked over me, and I then had caught out of it and knocked the breath out of him or something, you know. Mm-hmm. He reared up, he made a pitch far of it and hit me right in the bag. And I held on. I had a good grip, and I held on to that tab till he hit me there. I don't know how I could turn loose. When I got up, he made another buck right towards me, and I jumped behind a tree. And when I got up, well, I could see this boy is hunting his hat over. He done got up. He didn't get on. He showed him. I don't know how far he went. But now, he didn't weigh but 728 pounds. And you think about one hound you'd like that, you know. Well, I rode him. He never did show me. He ran away with me with a buggy one time, tore my buggy all to pieces, and I happened to be one of these sport model buggies and had an umbrella top on it, you know, and I just took it down. And I was trotting out a long ridge where I didn't know I'd go out and turn right quick down on a mountain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did, and that bug is going fast, I'd let him go fast, you know. I was going to let him, he wanted to run, you see. He was mean to run. I was going to be smart, and I let him start down that ridge. And all at once, that road turned, and I was looking off one side that way and thinking how fast he was trotting, to see how fast he was trotting. About that time, I had to turn and go right down that crooked, right down the mountain. And when I did, when all the spokes went out of that buggy going down that mountain, I threw my lines up this way and jumped up and let that bug go and turned over and let that bug come on. I hit my feet, my head went down in a rock, and mankind, his little old growl, and he just took all in my head there. It didn't hurt me much. I don't see how it kept, but when I got down to the bottom of the hill, I had a brand new set of harness on him. I didn't have no spokes in my buggy. Everything was tore up. All that part was, all the wheels, they was tore off before I jumped out. I let him run about 100 yards down that mountain with me for just as fast as he go before I jumped out. Wasn't no chance of me saving myself. I said, you know, if he was to turn a little bit wrong or something and switch me around the tree, I better get out of this thing. And I just jumped up and it went under me, you know. And when I came down, see, I had to come back over the back of the buggy, you see.
Yeah.
You can't jump sideways. You just jump up and let the buggy, see, if it had been a top buggy, I couldn't have done that. I more likely to have got killed. So that I got down there and he had done broke my new tugs and had one around his leg kicking and where his head ought to be, he'd turned around and had his head back there to the sangle tree. That's where his head was, and he was kicking, and he kicked that new lug into when I got down there, and I talked to him a little bit, and he quieted down. And I was about 8 miles from home, and I had to cross a river. And I had no way. And I had on a new suit of clothes, and I didn't want to run it. Riding in bareback, I run your clothes, you bareback.
Yeah.
So I took him out and kept the harness on him, brought that on in, and I stopped. I knew where some of my friends lived up there, where I had to go down another hill down the New River, and I got one of the boys to carry me in, and we'd ride across, got something we'd ride on, you see, and I led the mule across it, then I walked on home. I told him, I tried to pay this boy for going ahead with me, and no, he said, I ain't charging you nothing. He wouldn't take any money for it. I offered him money, but he wouldn't take it. So that when I went in that night, I was a little late getting in, you know, and mother standing on the front porch waiting for me to come in. Says, where's your buggy? I hate to tell, I was going to slip in, you know, but I didn't slip in. I wasn't going to tell her the next morning, afraid she wouldn't sleep, you know. She wasn't going to sleep till I got in. I got in about 11 o'clock, you know. I ought to got in about 9.
Mr. Weaver, when was it that you worked with them Texas horses? Was that up in Alabama or after you got out
there?
Yeah,
that was in Alabama. Was up in
so
Alabama.
You were just growing up then?
Yeah, I wasn't grown when I first started. And after I got grown, I swapped for those at Buck and it couldn't be rode. And some that couldn't be worked, you know, I'd trade for them.
And but that's up in Alabama?
Yeah, that was in Alabama. I never did ride. I rode one time down here. Helped drive cattle when I first came down, and they had a trained horse. So that, and a few minutes after I got on this horse, I found out it knew more about driving cattle than I did. Well, I done, I just let it go. And the blooming thing wanted to start out, breaking out on the side I was on. This horse had cut him off, put him back in there, and I just set up and just let him go. And
you know, I never worked on an animal like that. That would be right interesting.
Well, it's good sport, but listen, it got too rough. I got to where sometimes I couldn't tie a shoe, and they didn't show me they bucked so hard to me and jerked me around on that saddle up there. Now, that's a rough place to stay on a bad end. Every muscle I had was so sore I could not reach down and stoop over and tie my shoes sometimes. They didn't throw me. I stayed with them and broke them. But I think to myself, you know, that's too expensive money. I'm going to quit this, and I quit. I said, sooner or later, I'm going to get hurt. If you keep going on that there, thinking you're better than all those wild horses is, and you something will slip up. I've had the saddle girt to break, and I'd go way out, John, and it didn't hurt me. I've had them to fall, and I'd throw my foot out this way. Some of them, my father, he tried to hold on this way and did broke his leg, sprung his ankle. One fell on his ankle. I stepped out this way, and my horse got up. I stepped back in the saddle. I stayed with it. But my father fell down on him, and he went and clenched to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody put a pair of shoes on there, and he was elongated, and he stepped on that shoe before he picked that front foot up and just showed that mule just that quick, you know.
How's that?
And it's a gentle mule. It didn't try to throw him. It wasn't bucking with him.
He had a shoe on his toe.
Shoe was, I forgot, I can't tell you, I forgot what to call that. I used to know what to call, but anyway, it was too long for the mule or horse or what it was on, and a long gator doesn't sometimes step on that before he picked up that front foot.
Oh, the back foot would come up.
Yeah, and he caught that shoe, you see, it's left a little too long. I've seen them some a lot of times.
They just didn't want to take the trouble of cutting it off. They just put on what they had, didn't they?
Well, they made a mistake somewhere. If they hadn't a little too long, see, a long gated mule would catch it, you know. Or a horse, either one. See, we use mules. Mules is much better for hard work than horses was. Horses couldn't stand that hard work that we was doing. But mules could. We use most of mules for that hard work.
And
they plow better. There's better plow mules than there was plow horses. Horses would try to walk too fast. You could never slow them down and talk to them or rush, pick them up. The horses, most of them was a little too high speeded to side up a little stuff, you know.
You could talk to a mule?
Yeah. If you train them, you had to make them do. You had to break them. If you let there's worse than horses, except in horses get scared and run away.
Yeah, but I mean, one or two of them points. Let me tell you, but once you train, once you broke a mule, you could talk to him and quiet him down.
Sometimes you let him rest, some of them would get mean again. But you ordinarily, they'd get to where if you use them regularly and talk to them and make them like you. The way I used to do them, I used to find out what they liked. Some of them, I had a horse wanting candy. I know it wanted apples, and I had a mule. My best mule wanted, candy, and my best horse wanted apples. So I turned it. When I went to town, I always bought them something, and they'd run meet me at the corral, you see. And I'd feed them every time I'd come in from town, you know. And if I left them at home, you know, I always bought them something to eat, you know. If I went with somebody else, you know, or anything like that, when I never forget to get them some apples and candy, and they didn't believe it. I told them, I said, I can take this horse that we had to go to church, you know, in places. There's a lot of horses out there, mules and everything. I said, I can take old Dan and go right through that crowd. We're all around now, and he won't stop and mess with a horse and nobody. And he'll follow me if I tell him to.
Yeah.
The way I did it, I'd cut him off a piece of apple, reach it to him, and I'd say, Dan, if you want a piece of apple, come on and go with me. He'd come on and follow me, and I'd walk all among these horses. He didn't pay no attention to him, come on up. I'd walk a little piece, and I'd reach him a piece of apple. I'd say, Dan, if you want another piece of apple, come on, follow me. And he'd just follow me anywhere around there, the horses. And this mule would do that for candy. You find out what they want. And every time you go out there, they can be mean a while. And every time you go out there, give them a little of that.
Well, now, some mules are elongated.
Longer gated, steps longer than others. Some don't step in that front track. And some step that far over.
They better pick up that front foot then, haven't they?
And if they don't get that up, they step on that too quick enough.
Horse do that too?
Yeah, some horses longer gated than others. Haven't you noticed some of them jump farther and step farther than walking or anything? You watch your horses and see. Ain't all the same gated.
These little resting ponies now, when you got one of them that was still a little bit wild, did you do anything before you mounted them? I mean, did you give them, feed them, or
well, if we took those, sometimes we put them, we didn't want to fool with them, it was bad, or we didn't want to fool with them in, or didn't have time, had something else to do, we didn't fool with them. We put them in a corral, you know, and fed them, and then when we got time, we'd go and take them out and ride them. Sometimes we put the saddle on when we first got them. Sometimes we'd be well from home and buy them, you see, and put the saddles on. We had the saddles, put them on, ride them home. And if we didn't, if we was riding another horse, we'd lead them home.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'd go town with someone else, and they'd go on, and we'd stay around, or you'd go and buy a horse and boat one, you see, then if you carried a saddle with you, you could put it on and ride it home, didn't you? You better not get on it bareback, because they're hard to ride that way.
Yeah. But if you've got one that hadn't been handled very much, would you just go ahead and put the saddle on it, or would you handle it a while?
Well, sometimes we just put the saddle on right then. Sometimes we didn't. Sometimes we didn't have time to fool with it, you know. Because you don't get to them. When you're putting the saddle on one, you don't get one on one quick. You got to have two or three to help you hold that blooming mule if you'd ever get the saddle on it. Because it don't want that saddle on it.
How you go about that?
Then when you move that saddle, when you go trying to get on to get your foot to get in that stirrup, some of you, it takes you 30 minutes to get your foot in the stirrup before you can ever ride, get on it. They just won't let you. They'll just keep on getting around, staying away from
you. You mean if you're by yourself?
You can't do it hardly by yourself. You got to have somebody to hold it there. Now, sometimes, if you got to have somebody to attract his attention for you to get your foot. And when you touch that stirrup, you better go in it quick, because he's going to go to the bucket.
Yeah.
How'd they get his attention?
Huh? Well, you can watch him and tell when he's looking off, when he turns, looks out of where, you better get your foot and start right quick. Now then, if nobody was afraid of it, and get in and hold it, while he's trying to get loose from them, you see, he'd stop so long, you know, you put your foot in the stirrup and jump and go on over. You grab that horn of that saddle, you just pull slow, throw yourself right up on him, right quick. This boy that's riding that little Mustang mule I had, he's going to show how much better rider he was. he didn't make it. I think I've emptied that. I've got to go. I can't.
Are you getting something
out
of that?
No,
way,
no.
Oh, yeah, I've got something. Just a minute.
No.
Let me ask you one other point, Mr. Weaver, before you go. Mm-hmm.
I'm going
now,
to stand up. I've been sitting
here
too long.
Yeah. Now, how you hold them now when you're one man is going to get on.
You get a hold. Listen, let me show you. I walked up, caught my hand on the right that way, and I grabbed him by the ear.
You catch him by the nose?
Catch
one
him by
hand.
The nose, cut right there. So see, I had a good grip, you know, and
yeah. You
had to balance yourself and go with him. He may run a little piece with me, don't matter how bad he was, but
yeah.
I had his wing cut off, and he couldn't go. I made him bad and walk right back up to the crowd. I lead you back up that way. But you've got to have a good grip.
You mean you can cut his wind off and make him walk on back?
Yeah, and come back up. He can't get no breath. He's got to. It weakens him. And then when you went to get on him, you pull this. I always got on his left side and put this foot in the stirrup first, and I gave him a jerk, jerked his head towards me.
Yeah.
And pulled up, then I went up over the horn of the saddle here and on that mule, and I jerked him this way. Well, I had time to get on him before he could start to buck him.
Oh, you jerk
if
him one way and then jerk him the other.
You jerk him to you.
Yeah.
You take this hand and get yourself, but watch yourself on your balance when you, if you ain't careful now, if you hold these reins and don't he that'll help pull you off a lot of times. You got to let him have so much of them. Let him go ahead and buck till he gets tired of it. And when he quits and gives up himself, he's broke. He won't give you much more trouble if that's the first time you've ever rode him, if he ain't real bad.
Oh, he's got
You just got to be the best to handle one of them.
You've got to go ahead and let him buck.
You just got to let him buck. He's going to buck when you get on, if he's a bucking kind.
Yeah.
I took him 7 years old and told everybody to try to ride him and break him. But that's
7 years old.
Yeah, that is really rough on you.
Yeah, because
he's in good practice. He's in good practice bucking. But it's just it's an instinct in him to buck and know how to buck. Now, some of them will do this, they'll rear up this way and pitch away yonder this time, and maybe next time they rear up, they turn around and pitch way back the other way.
Oh, really?
And pitch way back, come around this way.
Oh,
and when they hit,
they're twisting.
When they hit, they kicked just as high as they can and jerked the head down. And if a saddle will go off, it'll go off, or you'll go off. And they can jump 10 or 15 feet out there. And they'll ride up this way just as high. I've had them hit me in the face with a head as they ride up with me. Then when they went to the ground, they may go that way and they may fall around and jump there, go the other way. You just got to be ready to stay on that blooming saddle. It's good sport if you like it, but it'll get too rough. It did for me.
Well, look, Mister, you have to sort of keep at it. You can't
you
do that one
practice,
day.
You got to practice it.
And just lay up in the shade the next day.
No, you got to practice it along, all along. And you don't make how gentle it is. You know what it'll do? Lots of times it'll do this. It'll be a going along of the old raver fence. I've had the quick ones, was gentle, broke, and wouldn't have told me for nothing in the world. I've been sitting up there in the saddle, and this is dropping reins down, and it did open along this way, and a little old calf in the corner of the fence, raver fence, jumped out right in front of it. Man, kind of went about 20 feet back this way. And you know what you got to do?
No.
Grip your legs right that way, and don't grip your heels. Grip your legs right here before you grip is. That's where you ride with.
Right there in your knees.
And I just stayed around. I just stayed limber up there in the saddle, and he went running the other way with me. And he was fast too, but he wouldn't have done that for anything, because that mule was well broken and one of the best ones I ever seen. But the calf jumped right out in front of me one night. I was sitting up by just to let him train under the saddle, just to lope along, just go along this way. And I'm not kidding you, he was quick. Well, I knew it. I knew he was that way, and if he got scared, he'd jump. And you got to watch him all the time. A dumb brute, you got to watch it, no matter how gentle it is. I know one fella up there had a mule 40 years old. And he'd always done anything he wanted this old mule raised. And he walked up when he was 40 years old and slapped him on the back and on the hip and he didn't know it and he kicked him in the stomach and killed him. A mule 40 years old done that. I didn't see it, but that's what they told me.
Oh, yeah.
And they weren't making it. I don't think they're making it.
I'm always tempted when I come up to a horse, a mule, to smack him on the hump.
Don't do that. If they don't know that you don't hear you and know you're coming, they're liable to kick you.
Sure.
I never have done it, Mr. Weaver, but sometime I might do it. Because I'm always tempted and
I hauled a calf and I laid it up in my truck one time. And it stood in the same place, didn't move. I'd look back and it was standing in the same place. When I got up to the market, I was fixing to unload it, and I told everybody, I said, this is one of the gentlest, quietest calves I've ever seen. I said, I don't believe it's moved out of its track since I let it up in here. And I got it to Flemington and carried it to the market in Gainesville. Foolishness, I was standing right close to its heels, and it just had started to untie my tailgate to unload it, About that time, bang, she went, hit that bull right in my face, and it would have hit me right in the face if it hadn't been for that bull. Got careless,
Yeah.
You cannot trust one, a dumb brute.
You was up there in the truck.
No, I was on the outside and untied the tailgate and started to take it out down.
Well, and your face was right there, even with the heels.
Yeah, right there, and I started to reach over to untie the other side, and it kicked just before I got that other side unhooked.
Yeah.
And I stooped over this way, reaching out this way, and I had calf was standing about that close to me, and it hit that board right at my head.
Yeah.
And boy, as hard as it kicked, and that popped, I don't know where it knocked me to.
Yeah.
And I told him right then, I said, I know better than that. I said, I was reared on the farm, I've handled cattle and wild stuff all my life. And dumb brutes, and you can't trust one. You always want to watch it. You want to be careful. Yeah, but don't let it know you're afraid of it. If it ever finds it out, you'll never do nothing with it.
Yeah.
If it thinks you're not afraid of it, it'll give up to you pretty quick. It's just an instinct in them to for
now, this protection. Old horse, it was 7 years old.
It's a mule.
Mule?
No mule. Weighed about seven, tried
well,
to 800.
What did you want to saddle him for?
Huh? Well, he is my brother-in-law's, and he led him to the, he didn't ride him to the, if it was a mile or 2 miles, he walked and led it, and I wanted to break it, and I rode it with a saddle on, you see, and I got on it one day out there with plow harness on it. Rode about a half a mile, and he had blind bridle on it, one blind loose, and I seen that, and he was watching me all the time, if I was walking riding it. And I got on up there. They got to kid me that I wouldn't ride it, you know, and I crawled on it anyhow. And you know that mule bucked with me with those plow harness on there until they bucked the bridle off and wrapped close to a hammer, and I was afraid to run through that with me, and I caught one of those bucks, and he was a fence rower and buck and everything. He knew it all. But I stayed there a long time, and after a while, I think, when that bridle went off, I said, I got no way in the world protecting myself but hit the ground. And I let him, when he went to the ground, I just jumped sideways this way and seen he's going to buck that way, you know, and I went off. He thought he threw me, but he didn't. I jumped off of him. But it made me sore when I hit the ground, Greg.
It was a work mule.
Yeah.
All worked it every day.
Yeah, it was.
But your brother.
Brother
led it.
Traded for it. He led it to the field, you know, to the farm, out on the farm, you know, where he's plowing at and what section of the land he was plowing in. He'd lead it out there, and I'd ride. We rode all the rest of them. We'd break them to ride, you know.
Sure.
And I was sitting up on mine, and he was kidding some boys like he was going to ride it, and he was trying to buck and wouldn't let them, none of them, get close to it. I got smart directly, and I hollered at him, told him, I says, I reckon you'll have to let the old man come down there and ride it for you. They all began to holler at me and kidding me and that I couldn't ride it, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't ride it. Well, I don't know. It was foolish of me to do that. I went down there, and it didn't want me to get nowhere around it. I told my brother-in-law, I said, just hold it. I can breast up on it. I don't care if it bugs. So that he turned in, and he wouldn't hold it. But he turned and put a plow line, and that's a dangerous thing that ever could have happened.
A plow line? Yes.
Had a plow line, and he's going to hold it when it's open, not let it get away so he could catch it. I said, don't. I said, you get that rock around me, you're
going to. He ain't going to go off anywhere.
I said, yes, they will, too. Sometimes they run off, and you have to run them down to catch them. And those mean ones will. I said, you pull me off that mule if I get on it. That way, I said, you don't do that. That's why I said, I knew you wouldn't ride it. I just breasted up on it and straddled on it, and the mule didn't buck a bit right there. I rode on about a quarter of a mile, you know, and I was going to get off just in a few minutes, and I took my eye out of that mule's eye. I was watching that mule all the time. Watching his eye, I could tell him the cut of his eyes what he was going to do, you know. I was slick as he was, and he was slick as I was, but he wouldn't try to buck for me. And I looked around this way, look, see how far he was back down about that time Hames hit me. And he jumped this way, he fence rode this way, and he fence rode two or three times me around here, I still stand with him. But Jack, I thought about those old plow harness. A fella got killed, you know, it didn't kill him dead, but he never was normal, and eventually died from one drinking water and got scared and jumped, and he got tangled in the harness and it killed him.
Yeah.
Jack, I thought about that, you know. When I did that, I said, the thing me do is to get off this mule. And I jumped off of him, caught on my feet and hands. I caught him just as he went to the ground. I could tell where he's going to go that way, and I just slid off that way, you see. Went down and right quick, you know. I was active back then, you know. I practiced.
I guess you better be.
And, of course, to my age, I'm still active.
Mr. Weaver, I was always told that a mule could be as broke as well as anything else, but sometime, like when you took your eye off of it, it'd kill you.
Yeah. That's the reason I say you've got to watch a dumb brute any time. You don't know what
that
it's fixing to do.
Does that mean they're mean?
Yeah, some of them is just mean, and some of them is nerves causes that, and some of them, they get scared and do that. Like, if that mule don't know you're coming, and you woke up out, he don't recognize your hand, you hit him, he's going to resist, he's going to kick or jump one.
Oh, yeah.
And happened that time with that old man that he kicked you. I mean, he kicked you and kicked him in the stomach, and he eventually died. He died from it. Mm. This man. And the mule was 40 years old, and he'd raised him and always done that all of his life. And but that mule, and that just shows you. And I told you about that calf, was the gentleman, and kicked me, and had been that part of that tail gate there. I just fixed and turned it loose and let it drop down. That calf had hit me right in the face.
Well, what happened to your mule? It was the 7-year-old mule. Did you get that? You could ride it?
Oh, it went on. Oh, man, I put the saddle on it and I could just ride it, and it wouldn't even try to buckle me as a saddle on. It done quit trying to buckle me as a saddle on.
But you didn't want to ride him with a saddle on. You wanted him to ride with a work on.
No, I didn't have no saddle out there, and I wanted to show him I wasn't afraid of the mule.
Well, could you ride him?
I was too smart, you know.
Could your brother ride him after that, just on the harness?
My brother-in-law, he didn't ride him to the field. But he'd ride him with a saddle on.
He wouldn't ride him to the field.
No, but you see, I rode him. I could ride him any time with a saddle on. I didn't care if it did buckle me at saddle on. I was a pretty good rider then.
Yeah.
And I got on that baden that I had one time, rode it out of the field. They got the kid and said I wouldn't do it, you know, and I jumped on it, and blooming mule didn't buck me. It was so tired, been cutting land weight all day. There's plowed ground there, and if it had thrown me, but I was foolishest thing with that bad and I had, and I knew he'd book too. And he walked on to the house, and I got near the house. I says, "Off one out, got on this blooming mule out with his plow on and so on." I says, "That's the foolishest thing ever I did." But he walked right on to the house with the other mule, you know, and come right on down. And I said, "The boy stopped," but boy, when I went to get off of him, I got off of him, and he went the other way too when I moved wrong on that mule.
I come.
When he found out how to leave.
When he found out he was leaving.
Yeah, and he didn't even realize until he got to the house, and I said, "Boy," and he stopped. And when I moved a different move on him, he knew then I was on him. And when I moved to jump off, I went off right quick, and he went the other way too.
Well, now look, Mr. Weaver, they used to talk
and
about
I, when I jumped off. Now listen, when I jumped off, I just come this way with the reins this way and jerked him back to me and didn't let him get loose from me, because you got to put your whole braces there, put your whole weight again those mules, because they're strong. If you ever let one get loose one time, you'll have trouble as long as you live with some of them.
Yeah. Every time they see the gate open, they'll head for it.
Oh yeah, they've got a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well now, you know, I used to hear they'd say a team run away or a horse run away or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now these horses won't run away. They haven't got nowhere to go. This is right where they belong, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But now, horses used to run away. They'd run away with a wagon.
Yeah, they run away, and if they got scared, some of them get scared. And some of them just mean to that.
Yeah.
They just want to do something mean. But most of them, after you've got them trained, if you're good to them and pet them and feed them and rub them and carry them off good and all like that, they didn't want to do wrong.
Yeah, they didn't know why they's already at home.
Yeah, but some of them, you had to beat them, make them do. And some of them, you just couldn't beat them and make them do.
Yeah.
You'd kill them.
Well, now, when they run off, where would they run to, Mr. Wheeler?
Oh, no telling. You might not find them 2 or 3 days or a week. Get on nothing. I run that wild, and that day this other mule that I had, I was going to ride that day, was fast under the saddle and a good runner. I run that mule about to throw that boy that day, and I get his head up to his hips, and I kept on riding. I never could get up out of catching. He gets it faster. See, the one I was on was having to carry me, you see. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it would have been put, and I never had seen that mule run like that before in my life. I thought that, and I was riding myself, I thought he'd outrun this other one, but he didn't do it, and him lose.
And he just
and this, he had the bridle and saddle on this other mule, had the bridle and saddle, and going this way. I was going to run mine up beside him and reach down and catch him. But I never did do it. We kept running until we all got around and got him hemmed up and caught him. Took about five or six of us on horses to catch that mule.
Oh, well now. After you quit running, he slowed up.
Well, he slowed down. He slowed down if I slowed down.
Yeah.
But when I picked up, he picked up.
I see. So and you could go over, back.
I run him over a mile and still never did get up out to catch him.
Yeah. So you went back and got these other boys.
Well, they was all coming along behind me on horses. A bunch of them was coming on horses trying to keep up with it. We went off and left them. I had to stop, slow down to let them come on and catch up. They were running as fast as these two. Just like you see in racetracks, you know.
Yeah.
There's some of them a whole lot faster. And some people are afraid to ride a horse fast. Well, I let mine, as I was on, I let him run all I thought he could. And called on him. And he didn't need calling on when he was trying to outrun him.
Yeah.
He really went.
And I couldn't outrun him. And I didn't catch him.
Well, now, how did these horses get past him?
Get past him? Well, when I stopped and he turned out and got out that way, and we all just eased around him and got him, and we weren't paying no attention to him, you know, an awful little distance from him, coming in different directions. And we got up there and hemmed him up and at a man's place, you know. We hemmed him up there where he couldn't get out, got on where he couldn't get away to run. We were some of us there, he'd had run right by us, you see.
Well, that's
we all
easy.
Just called in on him, you see.
That's the easiest thing in the world to do for an animal to cut through a line.
It's not as easy if you got a lot of good riders. It's not as easy to get through that. I seen him up there in Gainesville catch some cowboys up there, catch a big brim of bull that tore that fence down up there and come out. I seen him lasso a big bull up there and catch him. Now, how did they do that? They just knew how to do it. Now, he killed a bulldog that turned him loose. He threw this bulldog about 20 feet high that day, this Bremer did. I passed along going down there, and I seen that as a bad one, you know, and I eased on by right quick, you know, and here come a foolish smart boy behind me. And I hadn't got very far. And he booed at that, and here he come right through that fence, and boy, you ought to seen, and that whole yard was full of people out there in cars. They were getting in it and under it and on top of it. And I'll tell you, I was running too. I was into it too. Thought, I'm afraid of a Bremer. Now, Whiteface, I'm not afraid of them. They're not fast. They bet on their manhood.
Yeah.
You know, say, they go to fight, if they can ever get straight with them, no other one can push him harder. Do you ever know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, you take those jerseys, we had a big Whiteface bull and a Jersey bull. And Jersey weren't near as large as Whiteface. They bowed up to fight. This Jersey bull, he eased around and is easing up there in the white field, taking his time, you know. He made a dive and he knew where to hit his horn, right in that white face's shoulder there, where it hurt so bad. And boy, he had him bellowing for any time. And he went near as large as that white face. The white face is a good betting on his manhood.
Yeah.
And this Jersey, he is betting on his tricks, you know. They're pretty shrewd as Jersey is. You know how bad they'll sell, don't you?
A Jersey will sell.
Yes, sir. They've got tricks. If they don't want to do a thing and they get mad, they'll sell and you can't get them up. I had one in a shoot one day that got down to me, a Jersey cow, and I helped her. And I was trying to smother her to make her get up. You catch it old, got the wind off, and they got to come up. If you hold it long enough, gripping on it. And I bought her, and she sold in the shoot. and I was going to load her. Been better if I'd had her out of the chute after she known she'd have saw, before I couldn't have got her into the chute, but she just wouldn't go up in. Yet it got about half up in there and saw her, and I couldn't get her up. I spotted her just two or three times, and I knew the way, the position I had to get to her, that she was going to hit me right in the face, right in the cheek, with that horn. When, and they'll sure sling that head when they go to get up, and they're going, and they'll try to hit you with it, too. So I went down there the third time, and I had to turn it loose to dodge that horn. Third time, I didn't do it. I held on to her and made her get up, and she hit that horn right there in my cheek, and I mean blood went everywhere.
And you haven't been able to sing since?
See, no, it didn't bother that. I was seeing it. I can see it.
Sing tenor, I mean.
Oh. No, that wasn't what done it. That was a car wreck that done that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that doesn't bother you then.
Oh, that hurt, but it was sore for a while. But
I didn't know a jersey would sew.
You didn't?
No.
Man, you know the best way to load one is to just put your rope on them and put your rope through your truck up there and stand there and let him pull back all he wants, and directly he's going to give
yeah.
every time
yeah.
fighting down.
Yeah.
Don't never put your hand on a jersey. I can load one quicker by myself than the can of you helping. If you go up there trying to make it go, that's what we done that day, is going to make it go in there.
Yeah.
And it got down.
Yeah.
And if you just wait and never put your hand on it, and every time he gives to that rope, just tighten down that and hold it.
Yeah.
You got to be pretty strong and watch him. Now, he's watching you too, and he's trying to pull something on you.
Yeah.
You got to be ready to brace yourself. You can't do it and let over this way. Man, he'll throw you winding. When he comes back against his weight against you.
Yeah.
But if you keep yourself in brace that way, you half of that, you just have half of his pull.
Yeah.
When it's pulling that way. Well, see, and he loosens, you tighten down until he stops.